Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Last week, members of the Apache Stronghold marched to Washington, D.C. to protest the selling of Oak Flats, a place many natives consider sacred. They gave interviews to the media and sent out hashtags. They understand the importance of getting their message of cultural survival out to the world. Right after the news, we'll jump into a discussion about using activism and the legal channels to protect Native ways of life. We hope you can join us. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. New research paints an unsettling picture of the future of shellfish in coastal Alaska. The effects of ocean acidification are worsening. Researchers say that could mean the end of hatcheries in the next 25 years if costly mitigation efforts are not put in place. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more in the first of a five-part series.
2040. That's the date put forward by researchers in the ongoing study by the NOAA Pacific Marine Environment Lab in Seattle and the University of Alaska Fairbanks Ocean Acidification Research Center.
It was very, very alarming. Not knowing much about ocean chemistry, I know a lot more now than when we started, that's for sure.
Jeff Hetrick owns the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery located in Seward on Alaska's Kenai Peninsula, where the study took place. It's run by the Chugach Regional Resources Commission, who say they strive to develop tribal natural resource management programs for conservation and stewardship of traditional use areas. It's currently the only full-time commercial shellfish hatchery in the state, and it produces millions of shellfish spawn each year, from different types of clams to scallops, sea cucumbers to king crab. Right now, the hatchery only has an annual five-month window where ocean conditions are right for production, and that could close completely in 25 years. Jeremy Mathis is a NOAA oceanographer who worked on the project.
Unfortunately, Alaska is the canary in the coal mine for ocean acidification.
Ocean acidification is the name for certain changes in the ocean's chemistry due to higher levels of carbon dioxide that make it hard for organisms like clams and mussels to develop hard shells. And without shells, they aren't protected and can't survive.
We're seeing changes in water chemistry faster in Alaska than really any other place around the world. So it's our job now in the next few years to figure out what the magnitude and impact of those changes are going to be.
And he says, find a way to protect Alaska's fisheries before it's too late. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Tomorrow, we'll look at what one hatchery in the Pacific Northwest is doing to cope with changing ocean conditions. A new documentary about a Native American-owned South Dakota business made its world premiere recently as part of a series of short films celebrating small business. Jim Kent spoke with the co-founder of Native American Natural Foods about the film.
Buffalo Returns is a documentary film produced by Tribeca Digital Studios and American Express that tells the story of the Tonka Bar. Manufactured by Native American Natural Foods in Kyle, South Dakota, the all-natural buffalo and cranberry snack bar is sold at over 6,000 locations in all 50 states. CEO and co-founder Carlene Hunter says a nationally successful company like Native American Natural Foods isn't something people expect to see coming out of one of the poorest areas in the country.
You know, when they hear about Native American Natural Foods and our brand coming from the third poorest county in the United States, and our triple bottom line of our company, where we're trying to not only address the economic situation of the Lakota people of our reservation, but also the health and environment, it catches people's attention.
And though American Express and Tribeca Digital Studios were looking for stories about successful businesses at the forefront of the entrepreneurial renaissance, Carlene Hunter says the primary goal for creating Native American Natural Foods was the Lakota people. Buffalo Returns has premiered in over 40 million homes on cable platforms such as Comcast, Time Warner Cable, and the American Express YouTube channel. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. That is the Apache stronghold at Grand Central Station in New York City, before they made their way to Washington, D.C. to express their concerns over lost land on Capitol Hill. The Apache stronghold started their journey in Arizona on July 6th, and the group is a grassroots collective supporting the San Carlos Apache and other tribes as they fight to save Oak Flat, which is an area that many natives see as a sacred place. Earlier this year, 2,400 acres of land were transferred over to the mining company Resolution Copper after being added to a defense bill. Many are concerned about the company's potential extraction of the natural resources in this area. At the rally in Washington, D.C. last week, many voices of dissent on the sale of Oak Flat were heard, including the Apache Strongholds convoy. Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva, who is also the writer of H.R. 28, Save Oak Flat Act, spoke at the gathering.
And as we push this more and more into the light, more and more people are going to come to the realization, what a bad deal, what a horrible thing to do, and more importantly, those are not our values as a country, those are not our principles as a country, and this deal has to get undone.
Shedding light on important issues is the topic of today's show. And what's the best method to let the world know about Native issues and movements for change? Through the media, protests, social campaigns? What about getting your hashtag out there? Tell us what you think. Our phone lines are open. The number to call is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Ethan Manuel, a Sierra Club Director of Lands Protection, also spoke at the rally in Washington, too. He, too, is concerned about environmental issues and the possibility of other public places being open for sale. And he also commented that he was proud of the tribes and the Apache stronghold for their fight to save Oak Flat.
Because the only thing that works is persistent activism. And that kind of persistence is what it's going to take to right this great wrong.
And so what does it take to make sure people in the world understand your message? What about in your community? And what good comes from sending your message out to the world? Does change only come when others know and support your struggles? Our number again is 1-800-996-2848. And joining us from New Haven, Connecticut, is Melinda Tuhus. She's an independent journalist and freelancer for National Native News, and she was at the rally in Washington, D.C. We're going to go ahead and go to her now. Welcome to the hour, Melinda.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Melinda, thank you for being with us. And I quickly ran through something that, you know, has had a lot of strings to it and different layers, you know, since it was put on the floor of Congress. And Melinda, you know, tell us a little bit about what led to this rally.
Well, as you mentioned, there was actually a land swap that was attached to the defense authorization bill last December, which is considered a must-pass bill because everybody in Congress wants the Defense Department to have money to operate. So it was a situation in which these 24 acres at Oak Flat were traded by Resolution Mining, which is a copper mining company, for 5,600 acres of privately held land that it owned, scattered around Arizona. It wasn't one parcel. And so this this swap was put into the law, and as I understand it, I haven't actually been able to get to Arizona myself since this happened, but I understand that the company is actually, you know, took possession of the land and is actually doing some work to prepare, you know, this mine that would be 2 miles across and 1,500 feet deep, a huge gash, you know, on the landscape there, and basically would make it impossible for the San Carlos Apache to continue to use the land as they have for millennia. And the thing that was interesting, you know, Oak Flat isn't part of any reservation. It's federal land now, legally, and so it doesn't have the protections as much as a reservation would, but it was set aside by the Eisenhower administration in 1955 for the use of the San Carlos Apache because of its cultural significance, where it was used for different ceremonies. Apparently the people there, it's called Oak Flat because there were so many oak trees, and they collected acorns, which is a staple of their diet. So it was protected to some degree, but not enough to keep Congress from being able to make this switch.
And Melinda, tell us more about what people are saying about this on Capitol Hill.
Well, I think one of the most exciting things, and I know when I talked to some of the Apaches afterwards, they were the most excited. When they came to Washington, you know, middle of last week, the bill 2811 that's been introduced by Congressman Grijalva had 17 co-sponsors, and when he got up to speak, he said now there's 40. So it is something, and I actually did not get to check if there's any Republican sponsors on that bill, but there are 40, which is, you know, pretty significant jump. So I think a lot of people in Congress feel that this was, you know, it was done basically in secret. The tribe was not, you know, contacted about it or had any say in it. And actually, I spoke to someone at the Interior Department and got some quotes from the Secretary of the Interior, Sally Jewell, who said she was very unhappy with this swap, this particular swap. And she actually said she would work with the tribe and with Rio Tinto, which is the owner of Resolution Copper. And she was actually urging that they not build it on that site. Now, I mean, the copper is where the copper is, so I think if they're going to build the mine, they have to build it where, you know, they're going to be extracting the copper. But she did say that she felt that it was done in violation of the, you know, nation-to-nation relationship that the federal government is supposed to have with all these, you know, Indian tribes around the country.
All right. Thanks, Melinda. And what do you think after just hearing that? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Melinda, who were some of the other folks who were in attendance?
Well, what was interesting to me was each of the persons who had been on the caravan from the San Carlos Apache tribe introduced himself or herself, and that was really interesting. I think there were about 80 of them, and they, I think there were a few white people who said they were there in solidarity and they had come on the caravan and they lived in that area. But for the native people, I think every single one spoke in both their native language and in English, and I found that to be very inspiring because I, you know, didn't know that many people still spoke their native language. I thought a lot of them were, you know, pretty much gone. So, but in addition to that, there were people from that I met from native rights groups in that operate in Washington. There were also quite a large group of people from an organization called Beyond Extreme Energy, which has focused a lot on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission because of its approval for all these extreme energy projects. But, you know, they were in solidarity also with this extreme project and standing on the side of the Apaches to try to turn it back. And there were, you know, there were just a number. I'm not sure in terms of other organizations, but there were just groups of people, individuals and groups who were there because they heard about it somehow or other and wanted to be in support. It was held right in the grounds of the Capitol.
All right. Thank you, Melinda. And on the line with us today is Melinda Tuhus, and she is a freelance journalist. She also reports for National Native News. She's given us more on the Oak Flat story and what happened last week. If you have also been in support of Oak Flat, we want to hear, you know, how did you receive the message? Is it because you're from that community, or maybe you heard about it and you decided to stand with the group? You can call us right now. We want to hear from you. Today we are talking about getting your message out to the world. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'm going to ask this question again because I'm really curious to hear what you think. You know, does change only come when others know and support our Native struggles? Again, our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Melinda, let's go to one of the voices that was there and also was carrying the message of protest against Oak Flat. Joining us now from Arizona is Winsler Noisy Sr., and he's the councilman for the San Carlos Apache Tribe and leader for the Apache Stronghold. It's our pleasure to welcome him to the hour. Hello, Councilman Noisy.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be on the show today.
Thank you. And Councilman, you want to just give us, you know, your thoughts on, you know, what it meant to be able to, you know, finally get to this point, get to Capitol Hill and, you know, share this message of protest against Oak Flat.
Well, you know, I think first of those who really understand, you know, what we say in Apache is Shinagozan. What that means is that, you know, you've seen it and you were told. And this goes back, you know, for hundreds of years and how visions are passed, you know, from generation and the cries of our people. So coming to this point of where being in Washington, I mean, you have pros and cons feelings because one of the things that you pray and you hope that it's not in this generation or you wonder where it's going to be with your children or grandchildren. And to see what had taken place and all the things that happened, you know it's in this generation that change has to come. And you know, this is a cry for the from our ancestors to the people today and the worries of our children tomorrow. And, you know, it was just a magnitude of things that had taken place. It no longer became an Apache issue by the time we got to Washington. It became an American issue.
And so, Winsler, what do you think about that, that you have to have, you know, support, you know, even outside of your tribal community, if you really want to see changed? Is that a true statement or what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, my mother, she's 88 years old and she was raised by her grandmother, which goes into the 1800s. You know, one of the things that she told me was that there's so many reasons. You have a lot of reasons to be upset. You have a lot of reasons to do what you think you want to do. She says, you know, but, you know, what America has forgot, that 90% of our people were wiped out from the face of the earth. But there was those people from that side that had to disagree. And she says, you know, son, I know it's difficult. She says, but you're going to have to find those people in the world that agree that this isn't right. And once you find them, then conscience will come into play because those people are a part of this picture now. They are a part of what happened in the past. They're part of what's happening now and definitely for the future. So you have to put those things aside and really believe in the spiritual gift that we have from the Creator. And so that's the journey that we're on.
All right. Thank you for that, Winsler. And you're going to be with us the full hour. I want to also bring in another voice also joining us from Arizona is Nylan Pike. She is an Apache Stronghold member. And if you have seen this photo circulating of Times Square and a young Apache woman, well, this is the woman featured in that photo. She is enrolled with the San Carlos Apache Nation, but she is Chiricahua Apache. And it's our pleasure to welcome Nylan to the hour. Hello, Nylan.
Dakota, hello. It's really nice to be on the show with you today.
Nylan, thank you for being with us. And I just want to hear your thoughts on why it's important that the world hears the message that you have when it comes to Oak Flat.
You know, the message that I would like to give out is, like, this fight right now that we're going through as the Apache stronghold and the Apache people, you know, it's no longer an Apache fight. It's an all-American fight, and it just affects each and every one of us. It affects all sacred sites throughout Indian country. It affects all Americans because this is on federal land. So for me, you know, it's just something that I want the people to open their eyes to see what's going on, because as Native people, we've been that dust underneath the carpet, that hidden issue where no one knows what's going on or everybody is hidden from what the truth is. And as the Apache stronghold, our purpose is to open the eyes of the people, and because we want to be that voice of the people, to fight for the people, and that's all that matters.
And Nylan, it sounds like you have a young voice. And, you know, why is it important for us to also hear about this and issues coming from our Native nations from younger generations?
As a youth, that responsibility for us is that we create that the next generation, that future generation, and it's up to us, our responsibility, to pave that pathway, a strong pathway for the yet to be born. And so for the youth, you know, we see it as peer beings because we are young still, we're young yet. And so being that new eyes opening up to everything, it's what the older generation see, because what they see is something that they've experienced or have feelings for. And as a youth, we're all new to it. So we see things maybe a little bit clearer, but our focus is, especially for me, is that, you know, there is a yet to be born, the future of our children and the future of our people, and it's up to us to stand up to that and up to us to pave that strong path.
And Nylan, you have been a part of this journey coming from, you know, your own area there in Arizona and making this track all the way, you know, to the East Coast and then being on Capitol Hill to send the message. Anything you want to share, you know, that you were thinking as you were preparing, you know, to let your voice be heard? Anything you want to share, Nylan?
During this journey, I learned a lot personally, because my grandfather Winston, he talks about this is a spiritual journey, a personal journey for yourself. And I really do believe in that, because for me, I learned a lot. I learned a lot spiritually. I learned a lot about who I am, but I also learned a lot about our people, you know, that we all, as one people, we all go through these issues, from Native American people to Asian American to African American, even white American, that we all go through these social illnesses, and it's something that we know we need to unify and to be in solidarity with one another so that the future of our people is protected and it's safe.
Thank you, Nylan. Nylan Pike is with us today. She is, among many, a part of the Apache stronghold, and they made a journey from Arizona to the East Coast to talk about the sale of Oak Flat. And if you would like to share your thoughts today, please do call in 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Nylan, sometimes getting the message out there is about having your physical voice heard, but sometimes imagery also plays a huge role in helping people to understand, you know, the importance of issues. And the photo that features you holding a bow in Times Square has definitely caught a lot of attention. Nylan, anything you want to share about what, you know, that kind of image, you know, going out to the world, what kind of message does it send?
That question. For me, that image, that's with those bows and that bow and arrow that I'm holding, it has a huge symbolism in solidarity with tribes, because what those arrows represent is different tribes in solidarity with one another, that unification. And so me holding those arrows and that bow was something really important to me. You know, standing in New York City, it's a man-made city. It's surrounded by buildings. We're surrounded by trash. But as the hope for our people is there, and just like how I follow my grandfather and I follow the Apache stronghold, it's something for us that there are those few people and that there is still a future to be made for our people, something that gives that hope for us to keep fighting, that there's still those warriors in existence that our ancestors fought for us.
All right. Thank you, Nylin. And if you'd also like to add to today's conversation, call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. I want to go to Winsler now for a comment, too. Winsler, anything to add, you know, about the strength of your young relative?
Oh, you know, it's so awesome. You know, it goes back to a prophecy. You know, a prophecy was once sent to us that the next generation of leaders will be born. But it's up to us to teach, you know, and give and be true about what happened. And that's why, you know, being a leader here in St. Charles and around the country, you know, first I have to recognize that I'm a victim from the past. So as long as I can recognize that I'm a victim, then only brings healing. And that's the journey that we're on. And to see these kids, you know, break away from all the social illness that was created from reservation and still today. I mean, we have a lot of brilliant young people here, but you can still see the fear. And, you know, once fear was established in place among our people, then the hesitation or any kind of movement has been created, and very few have tried to break those barriers. And, you know, if there's any true change, it's going to come from our children of all color. And so people that are Native Americans and have leadership within their children, you know, they can connect with a lot of these non-Indians before they get destroyed by what America is all about. And so this journey has really made our eyes, you know, made us recognize, you know, that is a factor. And it's just sad that our leaders like John McCain and Gosar and Ann Kirkpatrick, you know, and Flake can't take that journey on foot, like, and meet people and sit around a fire and see the beauty and the importance of this land and the values that we have. It's sad that, you know, they all have become technical, and with the modernization that has really destroying the preservation of the future. So I'm just really at awe with all our children, all the different children I met throughout the country. It not only being Native Americans, but they have the same goals, but it's up to us to teach them that.
All right, thank you. And he's going to be with us a full hour, so is Nylin. Let me just let you know who is on the line today. We are hearing from Winsler Noisy Sr. He is a councilman for the San Carlos Apache Tribe, and he is also the leader for the Apache Stronghold. And with us, too, is Nylin Pike, and she is a young person who has let her voice also be heard. You might have seen her in the photo that has been making its rounds across social media, young girl standing in Times Square. And she's also telling us why it's important for a young voice to be out there when it comes to letting the world know about the struggles of our Native nations. And we want to hear from you, too. You know, how important is that young voice? What about our elders' voice? You can call in, too. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we're going to continue taking your calls and hearing your thoughts on all of this when we talk about sending a Native message out to the world. Phone lines are open. The number again, 1-800-996-2848. This month, Native art and talent are shining in our monthly literary spotlight. The 7th Native American Generation publication is celebrating their 10th anniversary with a special edition titled Snag, A Decade of Indigenous Media. Join us for the next Native America Calling to hear more.
I'm Nathan. My job gave me a lot. It gave me an income to support my family. It gave me purpose and pride. But the secondhand smoke there triggered my severe asthma attacks, infections, and lung damage. And I never smoked. It was so bad that my doctor told me I shouldn't work there anymore. I had to quit my job. But the damage was done. Now I'm so sick, I can't do much of anything I used to love to do. I don't referee youth basketball anymore. I don't run or lift weights. It's too much for my body to take. Instead, I'm taking breathing treatments or oxygen. I guess you could say my job gave me a lot. So let me give you a tip. Don't let people tell you that working around secondhand smoke is safe.
Smoking affects more than just your health. If you or someone you know wants free help to quit smoking, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and it's our pleasure to have you connecting to us today on our electronic talking circle. And if you ever have any questions about some of the shows that we have or upcoming shows, you can always send us an email. You can send it to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And we're on social media, too, if you didn't know. You can check us out on Twitter, send us tweets, and also find out what people are saying online during our live broadcast. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and you can also find us on Facebook. Just look up NativeAmericaCalling.com. And we know that Native voices are important to understanding the issues that, you know, are connected to our tribal nations. And many Natives use legal and congressional routes to get their message out. Other Natives use other means of activism and social campaigns. And so today we are asking, why is it important to spread a message from Native America to the world? You can share your thoughts with us today. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And last week, members of the Apache Stronghold marched to Washington, D.C. To protest the selling of Oak Flats, a place that many Natives consider sacred. And they gave interviews to the media and sent out hashtags. They have shared that they understand the importance of getting their message out. And with us today, we have two folks who are on this journey, Nyland Pike, as well as Councilman Wenzler Noyes Sr. And they're here with us today. If you'd also like to talk with them or ask questions, you can give us a call. Phone lines are open, and the number is 1-800-996-2848. I want to go ahead and take a call. We have Jennifer in Shawnee, Oklahoma. She's connecting to us online today. Jennifer, welcome to the hour, and please tell us about sending the Native message out.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show today. I appreciate it.
And Jennifer, thank you for calling in. And, you know, as we hear about messages going out, you know, how do you play into this?
Oh, I am the public information director for the Citizen Potawatomi Nation here in Shawnee. And so we, from our office, help spread the news of our tribe and of our tribal members and of other Native issues throughout the state of Oklahoma.
And so what role do you play in making sure that people understand the concerns of your nation?
Well, I have a philosophy that public opinion is public policy. And I think one of the struggles that we face is that we're always looked at as something of the past, and Native voices have sort of become irrelevant in the larger sphere of what's newsworthy. But we aren't irrelevant, and people need to know that we're here and that we matter, and that we're, as tribal members and as tribes, making great strides to advance our nations and the communities where we are.
And Jennifer, you know, what about a lot of times, you know, people who are, you know, making sure that the message gets out there, you know, are they're labeled activists? You know, what is that line between, you know, doing what you're doing and what some, you know, call protest?
Right. I think that, you know, sometimes that activist label sort of gets a bad image associated with it. Because people see it as one extreme or the other. And it's sort of different for what we do here. Not that activism is bad, but we're more in the middle, where it's it's sort of the news that we get out is more a part of everyday lives for people. And I think that's as important as activism because it helps to just integrate Native voices into the things that people see as part of their lives every day.
All right, Jennifer, thank you for your call there in Shawnee, Oklahoma. You can also add to the hour by calling in 1-800-996-2848. Let's take another call. We have Louise on Big Mountain in Arizona tuned in to KUYI. Louise, thank you for your call. And what would you like to share?
Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I got in support of Oak Flats through social media, Facebook. When the first call came out for support, I went down there several times in support because the linguistic network that we have as Athabascan tribes, you know, I see these relatives, you know, calling for help and, you know, just wanting to go down there and learning more. So connecting the dots, you know, we have a common player in place that's after resources. In their case, it's the copper. Here, it's the coal and the water. And so I think Native people throughout the continent from Alaska all the way down to the tip of South America, we're all in this situation now where the environment is being attacked for its resources, for more money for the already rich people to continue their war against Mother Nature and its people. And somehow we have to find a remedy to put a halt to that in one way or another because we all need to survive. It is in a time of critical need, especially now due to the climate change. So in that sense, you know, I could not just sit around and ignore what's going on, but to go show support, you know, and it's all about our survival. And
all right, Louise, thank you for your call. And, you know, how important is it that, you know, we support others when it comes to struggles that maybe a nation is facing, you know, hundreds of miles away or maybe just a neighboring tribe? You can call in and share your thoughts on that. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Thanks again, Louise. Let's go now to Winona here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Winona, you're on air.
Hi, it's Winona. I'm calling because I saw the picture of Nylan on Facebook, and it's a picture that said 1,000 words. Such a powerful image of a young woman, a young Native American woman. And I just want to congratulate Nylan for her activism.
All right. Thank you for your call, Winona. Nylan, any words for our caller, Winona?
I just really want to say thank you so much. Yeah, Sean. No, it's for the people.
All right, thank you. And Councilman Noisy, I also wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, before, you know, decades ago, getting the message out wasn't as rapid. And now with social media, you know, something could be happening. And the moment it happens, it's out there. How is that changing the way we as Native Nations need to consider, you know, telling the world about our struggles?
Oh, I'm really grateful. You know, I could go back to Arizona itself, how the old media is still, how would you say, being monopolized by those who have invested and those who have control. And the social media has really taken off to where it really broke down some barriers, and the truth was able to get out through people coordinating it and working together. And I'm really grateful. I mean, you know, there is some, I guess you'd say, some technical things that still need to be worked out as far as, like, truth. And that's really important that we remind ourselves that these things that are used will be done in that way. But it's been really tremendous. I think we wouldn't have had the coverage we did. Arizona didn't give us any coverage, not until we left the state. And when everybody else was covering this the stronghold's journey, then when we got to D.C., we finally got the local media finally airing us on the news here in Arizona to get the word out of what was happening.
And Chairman, we're going to go ahead and transition to another group that is using, you know, messaging to let people know about things that they're facing in their tribal nation. But Councilman, you know, anything you would like to make sure people understand when it comes to why people are speaking out against Oak Flat?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a combination of a lot of things. The first thing is that this is the first time you see tribal governments, let me say that again, tribal governments unifying against an issue. Now, even with Mont Graham prior, the problem that we had with Mont Graham, we didn't have our tribal council in support. And it took a lot of education and reminding them that they had the responsibility of the people, too. Because you got to remember that tribal governments were created by the United States. And they're mandated to follow and not argue with the United States. So they put a lot of dilemma in tribes and also with leadership because sometimes the majority that held the seats of leadership come from families that eventually gave in to the United States. So they kind of held it in the family. And now what you're seeing right now, which scares the United States, is the fact that over 400 nations are now unifying against this fight. But this fight represents all the fights of the United States. Tribal sacred sites, holy sites, identity. And this is why so many people are jumping on board, because what the United States is beginning to understand is that tribal governments are now turning against them. And this is where now you're going to have the pressure on tribal governments, not seen out front, but behind the scenes, like we're witnessing with John McCain threatening tribes here in Arizona about their water rights. You know, it's going to have to go through his committee, now wanting to make deals with them. So all that's in the process right now. So we're praying that our tribal governments still hold together. And then also going to the poorer tribes with Resolution Cowper wanting to filter more money into those tribes so that they can not pass resolutions and become, just become idle. So those political things are happening. And that's why social media is so important, because people can keep their tribal governments moving in the direction that we've been moving on, is unifying under one voice rather than be just indigenous people, but also in tribal leadership. They need to continue that road so that change can come.
And Councilman Noisy, are there any hashtags that people can continue to follow this?
I think it's the same thing that we have, if I understand it. I have a lot of the young ones working on that. So
Maybe we should ask Nyland. Nyland, what are the hashtags to follow?
You know, I'm going to turn that to Nyland, because Nyland knows that pretty good.
Okay, go ahead, Nyland.
That would be Apache, would be hashtag Apache Stronghold, hashtag Protect Oak Flat, hashtag Save Oak Flat, and hashtag Medicine Too Strong.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, folks, for being with us today. And now we're going to shift and go to Acoma, New Mexico, Acoma Pueblo, and bring in Jonathan Sims. He is the Pueblo of Acoma's tribal secretary, and he is from the Pueblo of Acoma. It's our pleasure to welcome back Jonathan Sims to the hour. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Kawadzi Kaita Halpa. Good morning, and thank you for having me on the air today.
And Jonathan, thank you for being with us. And you and others are dealing with the sale of sacred items belonging to the Pueblo in a French auction house. And, you know, global attention has been paid to this in the past. And now we're hearing about yet another incident happening. And Jonathan, today our message or our show is on messaging and how people are getting their voice out there, how people are understanding more about what Native people are facing. When it comes to the sale of sacred items, what's been done to let others know about what is going on, you know, across the globe?
Yes, you know, our situation is kind of interesting in the fact that this truly is a international kind of situation, and we find ourselves in the court of a French government, and it's quite a different situation than a lot of things that we run into here in the States in regards to maybe things like NAGPRA and those sort of issues. And so we have kind of had to figure that out. And, you know, we have basically been sending out press releases, and the Hopi tribe is really good at also sending out and keeping on top of their news and sending out press releases. And a lot of those things have been picked up by the media in general, have hit the wire. And we find ourselves in things like, you know, the Huffington Post and New York Times and Business Insider. But what's interesting is that, you know, all of those groups can take a spin and put a not necessarily give the best information and appropriate information. And so that's one of our struggles that we find ourselves in. And, you know, we hope to continue to get our story out there and hopefully, you know, maybe change public opinion. But it's a little bit harder in this situation because we're dealing with public opinion of an entirely different country. And so that's kind of our situation.
And Jonathan, a lot of times too, when we do talk about, you know, making sure that the truth is out there and making sure that our story is being told properly, in this case, and we heard this before when we covered it and for the Hopi Nation, about making sure proper terminology is also being used, you know, using the words, you know, sacred items as opposed to, you know, something else. Why is that also important to understand and make sure that the story gets out there, but with respect?
Yeah, you know, that is one of the things that comes up. You know, a lot of times people will talk about these items as just objects. And for us and for our people, you know, these are more than just objects. These are, you know, our cultural patrimony. These are our link to, you know, our culture and our ancestors and you know, that sort of respect that we have for these items is something that, you know, I guess we need to educate others on. And that's one of the things that is also kind of hard because in educating usually comes information. And in some of these cases, you know, these aren't necessarily things that we want to discuss in terms of how they're used or why they are sacred to us. And so sometimes it can be hard to make that case to somebody who has no background or no understanding of how we look at these things. And so, yeah, you know, correct terminology and just, you know, trying to convey that idea of how important something is to your people to another group who has no concept of that, that can be trying at times.
And Jonathan, let's talk a little bit more about that. You know, ultimately, it is going to take support, you know, from people outside of the Native Nation, you know, even in a different country. You know, what is the strategy to make sure that people hear the full story, even overseas?
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that we'll have to really look into and that we will be addressing is, you know, I think that in this case, this may be the first time that we really have to, as a tribe and alongside maybe the Hopi, go and really engage the media in France and try to get our story out there. You know, the only way that public opinion is going to change in a whole other country is for us to tell our story. And it's important for our story to be told also by our own people. Like I said, you know, a lot of times the news wires will be able to pick up a story, but you find that, you know, things may be left out or you know, information gets changed here and there. And so it is important for us to take it, you know, to the people. And you know, maybe through those means we garner public support. We haven't really, in this issue hit or use social media yet. You know, we do find these stories out online, and there is some support out there for us. And, you know, maybe in a sense we need to push that a little bit more. I really find it amazing the things that the previous people on the show today, the Oak Flat people, have been able to garner their support using the web. And, you know, maybe we need to look into trying to do that a little bit more on our end. You know, right now, as of a couple of weeks ago, a representative from Hopi went to the UN made a statement there in Geneva in regards to this. And so in some cases, you know, we're trying to garner international support at the highest level, but maybe, you know, we need to think about taking it to the people.
All right. And Jonathan, you know, many a times in the different journalist circles that we go to, even conferences often, we often hear, you know, people who want to know, how do you cover Native nations? And a lot of times the critique is tribal governments do not return phone calls. They don't give interviews. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. You know, is it time for some of these tribes who don't talk to the media to rethink things? Because when something goes down, you know, then they want the media to cover it. Your thoughts, Jonathan?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's always been a kind of push and pull between tribes and the media. You know, the media is always there trying to get as much information as they can. And, you know, sometimes tribal governments aren't necessarily willing to give out that sort of information. And it comes from years of, you know, our words being twisted and you know, our stories not necessarily being told truthfully. You know, in this day and age, we have a lot of young people and a lot of very media savvy people in all our pueblos and in our tribal communities. And these people, you know, we need to use as a resource in dealing with the media. And, you know, the media, too, also has to understand that there is a line in many times in our tribal communities that doesn't get crossed. And it's not because we're trying to hold things back or we're trying to, you know, trying to just be difficult. A lot of times that line is there for the safety of our culture and the safety of individuals and things like that. You know, a lot of our communities, you're not taught to, you know, speak as an individual. You're there representing the entire group of people. And so many times you'll find that, you know, some of our leaders are reluctant to speak on issues unless they have, you know, talked about those issues with their community, with their tribal leaders, and you know, that's kind of the situation. And media people also on the other end have to kind of understand that and respect that and know that, you know, there is a way to build those relationships, and it's through trust. And so, you know, if a tribe and a media organization, if the tribe feels like they can trust them, you know, I'm sure that the story that group will be able to get will be more in depth than
sure.
And you definitely
don't want journalists just, you know, parachuting in, give me the story, and then they're gone. Jonathan, we got a minute before wrap up here. Anything you'd like to share about why it's also important that, you know, Native nations, you know, hear about each other's struggles?
Yeah, you know, I think it's very important that each of us as different tribal communities throughout North America understand the different issues that each other are going through. Lots of times our fellow tribes have been through similar situations, and so there's help there. You know, there's the ability to confer with each other and see what's able to, how we're able to help each other, but also just in standing alongside each other. You know, Governor Vio here at Acoma, in our statement at the beginning of this situation with the Paris auctions, you know, said that we stand shoulder to shoulder with our brothers in Hopi. And that kind of support is what, you know, our communities have been built upon. And if we can show that support for each other, you know, Native nations as a whole will be stronger, I think.
All right. And Jonathan, if folks want to find out more about what's going on with the auction, any place or hashtags that they should be looking for?
Right now, we don't really have any hashtags per se, but the Hopi Tribe's official website is a great resource. They keep up to date in terms of all the news that's happening in regards to the situation. And I believe you can find that at www.hopi-nsn.gov. And they have a great little news section there, and you can keep up to date with the happenings.
All right. Thank you very much, Jonathan Sims, Pueblo of Acoma's tribal secretary, with us today. And that's going to wrap it up for today's program. And if there are other hashtags that you'd like to let us know about that speak of issues that you're facing in your tribal community, please do. Tweet it right now. If you're in the hashtag mode, I know you know how to tweet. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to thank our guests, too, hearing from Councilman Winsler Noisy Sr., Nylan Pike, and also Melinda Tuhus, reporter for National Native News. That's who we heard from today. Thank you for your time and all the voices that continue to contribute to our hour. Over the years, we're 20 years old, and just imagine if we were to sum up all the voices ever heard on Native America Calling, well, that would be a big number. And thanks to everybody for tuning in today. Our senior producer is Monica Brain. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. And today's engineers are Stephen Emmons and Jared Ebenreck. Rachel Cassidy screened your calls today. And Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. We'll be back tomorrow.
Support by Humboldt State University's part-time online Master of Social Work. The 3.5-year program focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st for a January start at humboldt.edu/socialwork. Support for this program comes from KeyBank's Native American Financial Services team, focused exclusively on serving the full financial services needs of Native American nations for more than 50 years. KeyBank is member FDIC.
Yat e komunalis yo kesi pesoch ahna nelgit ahwe den kotala ya altaw khalchin endadane selko arud a lhaji jol neskola altot aba hinedot aba hastke got e koko pesoch ahna lelgi labna idel kedo healthcare.gov/tribal 808-1-800-318-2596 nege zedal ingo dabna idel kirole le dj yalto centers for medicaid and medicaid service lan hich haneda yila.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.